This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Nearly 30 Palestinians have been killed in the latest Israeli airstrikes across Gaza. One of the attacks hit near a Jordanian makeshift hospital. Medical centers have been the prime target of the regime's air campaign that has killed almost 19,700 Palestinians dead since October the 7th. Israel has reportedly informed Qatar about its willingness for a new ceasefire in Gaza as the international pressure mounts on the regime to end its genocidal war on the besieged Palestinian territory. Malaysia has banned Israeli-owned ships and other vessels heading to Israel from docking at all domestic ports. Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim, in a statement, said the restrictions are a response to Israel's violation of international law through continuous massacres and atrocities against Palestinians. He said the restrictions are effective immediately. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Dozens of Palestinians have lost their lives in the latest Israeli airstrikes in Gaza. The victims were killed in airstrikes in different parts of Gaza, including Deir al-Balah as well as Jabalia. The death toll now tops 19,700 since the war began on October the 7th. Israeli forces have raided Al-Ahli Hospital, knocking it out of service and abducting staff members and patients. It was the last functioning medical facility in northern Gaza. Internet and phone services have been cut off in Gaza as well due to Israeli attacks. Meanwhile, two Israeli soldiers have been killed and 29 others wounded in battles with resistance forces over the past 24 hours. Israel has reportedly signaled readiness for a new ceasefire in Gaza as the international pressure mounts on the regime to end its genocidal war in the besieged Palestinian territory. According to Israeli media, Tel Aviv has informed Qatar about its willingness for a temporary truce. The regime will also allow the entry of humanitarian aid into Gaza in exchange for the release of Israeli captives. Meanwhile, Hamas chief Ismail Haniyeh is in Egypt for truce talks. A previous agreement mediated by Qatar and Egypt led to a week-long truce at the end of November. During that period, Hamas freed 86 captives in exchange for the release of 240 Palestinian women and children. The regime unleashed its war for the stated goal of releasing its captives and eliminating Hamas. None of the goals, however, have been achieved. Senior Hamas official Saleh al-Aruri has talked to Press TV about the Gaza war. He says the movement had proposed the release of all Palestinian prisoners in exchange for the release of all Israeli captives, including civilian men. But the regime refused that. Saleh al-Aruri says that the refusal was the main reason behind the collapse of talks to extend the ceasefire reached last month.
One of the goals of operations of October the 7th was to bring the captives with us to Gaza Strip. There has been a lot of talk going on about the presence of women and kids among the captives. What I want to explain here is that the decision inside Al-Qassam Brigade and other resistance movements in general was the arrest of Israeli soldiers. So the attack targeted the military division. Some of the personnel were killed while some others were arrested. From the first day, we said we do not mean to keep the civilians, but we have women and kids in Israeli jails, and they must be freed. This is non-negotiable. The exchange deal is something else. From the first day of the conflict, we said it clearly that the goal of keeping the Israeli military personnel was to free our captives who have been inside Israeli jails for tens of years. We said it very clearly. We were ready to hand over all the prisoners and the corpses in exchange for all of our captives and the corpses with the Israelis who used to kidnap our martyrs in the battlefield. Therefore, from the beginning, we wanted all for all. But the Israeli regime did not reply. They were concentrating on the women and kids. Even when we proposed the release of some civilian males, not soldiers, they refused the deal, saying we do not want them.
Head of Hamas Political Bureau Ismail Haniyeh says the Palestinian resistance remains firm in its battle against the Israeli military as the regime's genocidal war in Gaza enters its 75th day. In a meeting with Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian in the Qatari capital, underlined that Israel keeps targeting Gaza from air, land, and sea. However, he explained resistance fighters remain strong and determined in the battlefield and have inflicted heavy losses on Israeli forces. He said although tens of thousands of Gazans have been killed or wounded in the Israeli onslaught, they have put up a stiff resistance against the invaders. And he also thanked the Iranian foreign minister for following up on the Gaza developments. The meeting came during a fourth visit by the top Iranian diplomat to Doha as part of efforts to muster support for Palestinians. Farzana Ashourian joins us from Doha to tell us more about this trip. Well, tell us the developments coming out of this trip that you find important.
Kaveh, today, 2 a.m. local time, Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian made a visit to Qatari capital, Doha, and he made a meeting and he made a visit to actually hold a meeting with the leader of Hamas, Ismail Haniya, in order to, the main topic and the main point of this meeting was to discuss a possible ceasefire and truce talks, as the both sides believe that as long as the Israeli onslaught on Gaza is going on and the Israeli regime keeps its atrocities against the Palestinian people, it is not possible to actually open some negotiation routes. And as long as the atrocities goes on, any political or diplomatic way is impossible. And another important point that Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian mentioned with his interview with the reporters was that 14% only, 14% of the resistance capability have been involved during the last more than 70 days of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza Strip, which shows that if the war stops at any level, it will be beneficial for the resistance front, and it will be a real harm to the Israeli regime, as the Israeli regime has lost its international support and has not actually actually managed to get to its goals. Once and time and again, we had heard from the Israeli officials that the main goal is to destroy Hamas. And of course, after this meeting with Ismail Haniya, Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Abdollahian held a meeting with his Qatari counterpart. They also discussed the truce talks and the possible ceasefire in the region, because actually he believes, and the both sides, of course, believe that in the region, the countries are seeking for a possible ceasefire, as I once mentioned, as long as the Israeli atrocities goes on against the Palestinian people, any diplomatic or political actually way is blocked, and Israelis have not gained what they wanted to gain. And of course, among the developments about the war in Gaza, two parts, two actually sides discuss the diplomatic ties, bilateral ties between the two countries of Qatar and Iran, and the about the economic and political ties between the two countries. Back to you, Kaveh.
Thank you so much for that. We appreciate it. From Doha, Farzana Ashourian. Thank you, Farzana. Moving on, Malaysia has banned Israeli-owned ships and other vessels heading to Israel from docking at all domestic ports in reaction to the regime's bloodshed in the Gaza Strip. Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim, in a statement, said that his government's decision comes into immediate effect. Any vessels en route to Israel will also be banned from loading cargo. The statement said the restrictions are a response to Israel's violation of international law through continuous massacres and atrocities against Palestinians. Anti-Israeli campaign group the Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions, or BDS movement had urged Kuala Lumpur to stop providing Israel with shipping services. Malaysia is a strong supporter of the Palestinian cause and does not have diplomatic ties with Israel. Anwar has also refused to bow to Western pressure to cut ties with the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. In West Asia, the Yemeni army has also conducted operations against Israeli-linked ships in the Red Sea in recent weeks. Israeli forces have killed a Palestinian in the occupied West Bank city of Al-Khalil and arrested nearly 30 others during new raids. Our Ramallah correspondent, Mona Kandil, joined us earlier with more details.
This morning, Israeli forces raided the city of Al-Khalil. The Israeli troops stormed the house of one of the Palestinian martyrs, Al-Qawasmi, who carried out a shooting at one of the military checkpoints between Beit Lahem and Al-Khalil. And at that time, three Palestinians had been shot and killed. Today, the Israeli forces raided the home. They took the measurement of the house, and this means that the Israeli military will be destroying the home of this Palestinian martyr. In the town of Tamun near Tobas, the Israeli forces raided the Tamun. Clashes had taken place between Palestinians and the Israeli forces, and at least one Palestinian was shot by the Israeli forces. 16-year-old Palestinian was seriously wounded by the Israeli forces. In Al-Yamun, in Jenin, two Palestinians had been wounded in the clashes and the military raid that aimed to arrest Palestinians accused by the Israelis for being wanted Palestinians. In Asir al-Shamaliya near Nablus, a number of Palestinians had been wounded, according to paramedics, during the military raid as well. In Sa'ir, northern Al-Khalil, the Palestinian prisoners community, the Palestinian Prisoners Society, said that at least three Palestinians had been detained by the Israeli forces from Sa'ir near Al-Khalil. One of those who had been detained was wounded during the military operation.
The head of the International Committee of the Red Cross has slammed the global inaction over Israel's crimes against Palestinians in Gaza.
I have started speaking of moral failure because every day this continues will be a day more in where the international community hasn't proven capable of ending such high levels of suffering, and this will have an impact on generations, not only in Gaza but beyond Gaza, because these images remain.
Paul Jarrick was speaking to journalists in the Swiss city of Geneva following a trip to Gaza. The ICRC president called for a ceasefire in the Palestinian territory, cleared the way for the delivery of humanitarian aid, and a new prisoner swap deal. She stressed that the current level of strikes on Gaza make a meaningful humanitarian response extremely difficult. With announcements of new weapons for Israel, Washington continues to ignore worldwide demands for peace in Palestine. Polls show that inside the U.S., a majority of young voters have now turned against the colonialist project of Zionism. Ramin Mazari has more from Chicago.
The United States continues to double down on their support for Israel. In a visit to Tel Aviv, the U.S. Secretary of Defense promised more munitions, tactical vehicles, and air defense systems, and said he wasn't there to dictate timelines for peace.
The United States will remain Israel's closest friend in the world. And as I've said repeatedly, our support for Israel's security remains unshakable. And it always will.
For over 2 months, Israel has blocked deliveries of water, fuel, food, and medicine, leading top NGO Human Rights Watch to say that Israel, quote, is using starvation of civilians as a method of warfare. Indiscriminate airstrikes have destroyed 20% of Gaza's buildings. Israel's war crimes have caused their support to plummet in a country traditionally dominated by pro-Zionist sentiment. Polls say just 30% of the United States wants to send Israel more weapons. Another poll revealed that a majority of Americans aged 18 to 24 have effectively become anti-Zionists, with 51% agreeing that the long-term answer is for, quote, Israel to be ended and given to Hamas and the Palestinians.
Victory has never seemed so close, because this idea of the invincible Israel was shattered on October 7th. And now the so-called axis of resistance is now including people of the world, right? It's no longer just the axis of resistance in the Middle East. It's the people in the diaspora. It's, you know, people who have a conscience in Brazil, in India, where, you know, trade unions are also demanding to divest and to boycott Israel. The axis of resistance has expanded to almost the entire world.
Despite recent talk in the United States mainstream media that Israeli atrocities are causing a rift between Washington and Tel Aviv, others believe history's actions speak louder than words.
And I think this is where we have to have a class analysis. It's absolutely in the interest of the 1%. In fact, they're desperate because they have relied on Israel for 75 years as like a forward military force, first for the UK and then now for the, you know, for the last 60 years, my whole life, you know, for the U.S., Israel's been their unsinkable aircraft carrier.
Also discussed between the U.S. Secretary of Defense and Tel Aviv was a transition to a so-called next phase of the war against the long-brutalized Palestinians. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
The U.N. Security Council has held another meeting to discuss the Gaza war. Addressing the meeting, the Russian ambassador made a blistering attack on the U.S. for vetoing the Council's resolutions that call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza.
Despite the efforts made by the absolute majority of Security Council members, all the drafts submitted were blocked by Washington. Washington, instead of helping civilians, is providing Israel massively with all kinds of weapons which are used to kill Palestinian civilians currently. And everyone should understand that the stalling of collective UN efforts is not a result of some kind of objective institutional issue, but rather as a result of stubborn and egotistical ambitions on the part of American leadership. It will not be an exaggeration to say that there is a consensus in the world about the need to have an immediate humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza.
The Russian diplomat added that the U.S. veto of the latest Security Council resolution blocked the world body's efforts to end the bloodbath in Gaza. The United Arab Emirates envoy also spoke at the meeting, slamming Israel's deadly attacks against Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank.
We are now coming to the end of what was the deadliest year in the occupied Palestinian territory. This should be a wake-up call that the current status quo cannot be allowed to continue. Meanwhile, less than 100 kilometers away from Gaza, people in the West Bank are living in a situation of violence and fear that has escalated over the past 2 months. Since 7 October, the number of people killed in the West Bank has increased. 278 Palestinians, including 70 children, have lost their lives. This is more than half of the total number since the beginning of the year, in a year that was already witnessing unprecedented levels of violence.
Britain's UN envoy also addressed the meeting. James Kariuki slammed settler violence and the expansion of Israeli settlements across the occupied West Bank.
We are banning those responsible for settler violence from entering the UK to make sure our country cannot be a home for people who commit these intimidating acts. And we reiterate our call on Israel to immediately and completely stop all settlement activities in the occupied Palestinian territory.
Israeli forces and settlers have increased their violent attacks against Palestinians in the West Bank since the regime launched its genocidal war in Gaza more than 2 months ago. The regime is also pressing ahead with its settlement expansion plans, despite growing international calls to abandon such activities. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's goodbye for now.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
The Israeli regime's drone attack has killed an Al Jazeera cameraman and injured the network's bureau chief in the Gaza Strip. Reports say Al Jazeera cameraman Samer Abu Dhaka was left to bleed to death for hours. The Zionist regime's killing of Samer Abu Dhaka is the latest in its deliberate and systematic attacks on Palestinian journalists and their families. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website Electronic Intifada has covered this story and tells us more. The Israeli regime's drone attack has killed an Al Jazeera cameraman and injured the network's bureau chief in the Gaza Strip. The Israelis fired the missile that injured Wael al-Dahdou and cameraman Samer Abu Dhaka after they were dispatched to the Farhana school amidst calls for rescue from injured and besieged Palestinians trapped there. While al-Dahdou managed to reach paramedics on foot, Abu Dhaka's injuries prevented him from doing so. The Israeli regime obstructed ambulances from reaching him as he lay on the ground for hours, bleeding to death. The Zionist regime's killing of Samer Abu Dhaka is the latest in its apparently deliberate and systematic attacks on Palestinian journalists and their families. With Abu Dhaka's death, the number of journalists and media workers killed during Israel's genocidal war on Gaza has exceeded 90. Speaking from his hospital bed, Wael al-Dahdou explained that he and Abu Dhaka had been covering the evacuation of a Palestinian family from the school alongside an ambulance with prior coordination. "We reached certain locations that no camera lens had reached since the ground invasion. Even civil defense and ambulances had not reached those places," he said. After concluding his reporting, while al-Dahdou was walking over a distance of several dozen meters, since vehicles couldn't reach the area due to the level of destruction, when he felt that something big had happened that threw him to the ground. Al-Dahdou said he tried to regain his strength to seek shelter as he anticipated another missile strike would follow. Realizing the severity of his bleeding arm, al-Dahdou pressed it and opted to keep walking. He eventually spotted paramedics and signaled to them, but they were unable to reach him. The Al Jazeera correspondent walked until he got to them, received first aid, and was taken to hospital. "I asked them to return to Samer Abu Dhaka," al-Dahdou said, but the paramedic said that we had to leave immediately and send another vehicle to the location to avoid all of us becoming targets, and we arrived at the hospital. By the time he reached an ambulance, medical staff said they could not return to the site of the attack because it was too dangerous. Following Samer Abu Dhaka's injury, he was left to bleed to death for over 5 hours as the Israeli military prevented ambulances and rescue workers from reaching him, denying the much-needed emergency treatment. While al-Dahdou told the network that one ambulance tried to reach Abu Dhaka, but the Israelis fired at it. The live broadcast showed Wael al-Dahdou shortly after he arrived at the hospital. He urged medical staff and journalists around him to go back and rescue the cameraman Samer Abu Dhaka. Samer was screaming, "Coordinate with the Red Cross, get someone to bring him." Wael al-Dahdou displayed the same dignity and determination that he displayed when the Israeli military killed his wife, son, daughter and grandson in Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza Strip on 25th of October. This is a preliminary message, despite the wounds, he said, from his hospital bed. I will try to regather myself and my strength to continue what we started from the beginning of the war, and despite everything, I expect to meet you tomorrow morning live on air. This was also not the first time that Wael al-Dahdou had been injured by the Israeli military whilst reporting. He was struck in the arm by bullet shrapnel whilst covering Gaza's Great March of Return protests in May of 2018. Al Jazeera's managing editor, Mohammad Mu'awad, described Samer Abu Daqqa not just a skilled professional, but a compassionate soul who understood the power of visual storytelling. Mohammad Mu'awad said his lens captured the raw and unfiltered reality of life in the Gaza Strip, and his courage in the face of adversity allowed the world to witness the untold stories of the region. Friends and colleagues mourned Samer Abu Daqqa and remarked on his dedication to covering the Israeli regime's genocidal war on Gaza. Abu Daqqa had the opportunity to work in Belgium with Al Jazeera, but chose to live in the Gaza Strip and convinced his family to come back to Gaza as well. His colleague, Tamer Al-Mashal, recounted. The Committee to Protect Journalists called for an international probe into the attack, which it says was a result of a missile launched from what is believed to be an Israeli drone. Al Jazeera Network aired footage of Wael al-Dahdou wearing his press vest and assured in its reporting that he was taking precautions and was identifiable as a member of the press. Last month, Palestinian reporter Hind Khoudari told the Electronic Intifada that she and others chose not to wear their press vests or carry press gear due to the fear of becoming targets when forcibly displaced from northern Gaza to the southern Gaza Strip. Al Jazeera said it holds Israel accountable for the systematic targeting and killing of Al Jazeera journalists and members of their families. On Monday, an Israeli airstrike killed 90-year-old father of Al Jazeera reporter Anas al-Sharif. This came after al-Sharif had received threats from Israeli military officers by telephone. Israel's attacks on journalists also extend to the occupied West Bank. Israeli forces violently attacked Anadolu news agency photojournalist Mustafa al-Kharouf in occupied eastern Al-Quds recently whilst he was reporting there. Israeli police first pulled their weapons at al-Kharouf, who was covering the news, and then threw him to the ground, beating and kicking him whilst he was underground. The physical attack on Mustafa al-Kharouf is not a singular incident, CPJ program director Carlos Martinez de la Serna said. It belongs to a pattern of physical attacks, assaults and threats by Israeli soldiers and Israeli settlers on journalists reporting from the West Bank. CPJ says it has been able to confirm the deaths of at least 57 Palestinian and 3 Lebanese journalists. Israel's attacks on journalists also extend to assaults, threats, cyber attacks, censorship and killing of family members, according to CPJ. This is the deadliest month for journalists since CPJ began gathering data in 1992, according to the group.
Ocean of Dua.
Our أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll adopt a thematic approach toward supplication, and we'll have a look at supplication from the point of view of different verses of the Holy Quran, and we'll also have a look at some parts of the transmitted supplications as well as the whispered prayers. So stay with us. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahum wal'an alahum ajma'in. As you were previously with us, dear listeners, we concluded that the school of supplication has got many features in which sublime intentions are set by the Almighty Allah. And He wants us to be educated. And one of the programs He has set for us is the program to be educated through these set of supplications, specifically to the transmitted ones. That is why we believe in naming the different objectives of the supplications. The very first one must be the fact that we find not even one case where the causation is referred to other than the Almighty Allah. We understand and we completely and explicitly feel this, that in supplications, nothing is going to take place ever without the consent of the Almighty Allah. So anything that happens by other than the Almighty Allah, we believe based on the traditions that are explicitly mentioning, they are happening with His consent. We read in the traditions and the supplications, وَخَلَقَ لَهُمُ النَّهَارُ مُبْصِرًا لِيَبْتَغُوا فِيهِ. He is the one who has created the day and made it bright for them to benefit from their Lord's favors. And then it continues, وَلِيَتَسَبَّبُوا إِلَىٰ رِزْقِهِ. To gain livelihood, to rove in His earth to get their necessary needs of their worldly life. طَلَبًا لِمَا فِيهِ نَيْلُ الْعَاجِلِ مِنْ دُنْيَاهُمْ وَدَرْكُ الْآجِلِ فِي أُخْرَهُمْ. They need to be sure of reaching to their necessities of this life and the afterlife. And whatever they need is presented in this life. Whatever they need to take from, they must take from this very world. So it is really important to recognize the absolute power, to recognize the Almighty Allah with the absolute knowledge. We have to recognize the absolute magnanimity of God. And they are evident for the infallible Imams. This kind of knowledge that we are discussing here is not the kind of common knowledge that we see around. Rather, it is their special understanding. And these people, these infallibles, when they present to us, when they hand down to us their transmitted supplication, it means that we are being actually educated by reciting them, by talking to our Lord in their method, in the ways they have recommended us to do so.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. inasmuch as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, "Har khujo mushkil, javab anjo ravad." Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Har khujo kashti, ab anjo ravad. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Ab kamju, tishnagi avar bedast. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. Ta beju shad ab az. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the mercy of God will come towards you. Paradise, thank you Allah, that we hear, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God speaks with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
Dear listeners, we said that the first objective of the School of Supplications is for the supplicant to recognize that the Almighty Allah is one and He is the absolute cause. We said that the kind of recognition that we achieve from these supplications is because of what the infallible Imams have mentioned and set therein. So these infallibles are in fact manifestations of God's attributes, and there is no separation between them and these attributes. So when the infallible Imams alayhim salam refer to themselves, they introduce themselves as God's great names. The reason is that the Imam's body in this world and his truth rests in the other world. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, وَنَحْنُ عِنْدَنَا مِنَ الْإِسْمِ الْأَعْظَمِ إِسْنَانُ وَسَبْعُونَ حَرْفًا. With us, there are 72 great names of Allah, وَحَرْفٌ وَاحِدٌ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ, and one name only is with Allah. That is to say, it is particular to Allah, and no one knows it. We also have other traditions supporting this. Muawiyah ibn Ammar reports from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam that Imam alayhi salam says, نَحْنُ اللَّهِ أَسْمَاءُ الْحُسْنَى. By Allah, we are the attributes of the Almighty Allah. And we also have other cases as well. Hamad ibn Uthman reports from one of the infallible Imams to have, that he has said, يَا أَبَا الصَّبَاحِ نَحْنُ اللَّهِ النَّاسُ الْمَحْسُودُونَ. By Allah, we are the very ones who are envied by the people. What does this mean, dear listeners? This shows that the infallible Imams are so close to God, they are the closest ones to God. That is to say, they are in a world higher than this one. That is why we have seen the cases in which Imams say, or Imam Ali alayhi salam, for example, says, لَوْ كُشِفَ لِيَ الْغِطَاءَ مَزْدَدْتُ يَقِينًا عَلَى يَقِينِ. If the curtains of the truth are drawn apart, my conviction, my certainty will never change. I am in the highest level possible. I am the closest to the Almighty Allah possible. I am the closest to God, so I am higher than this world. That is why, نَحْنُ وَاللَّهِ النَّاسُ الْمَحْسُودُونَ. Sometimes they are envied by the people. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
In Yemen, a spokesman for Ansarullah resistance movement says the Yemeni army's operation against ships that are owned by Israel or bound for the occupied Palestinian territories has taken a big toll on Israel's economy. We take a look at some of the world media and press's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Website Grand News has covered this story and tells us more. The Yemeni armed forces have launched attacks on two Israeli-bound ships sailing in the Red Sea amid a campaign to pressure the Israeli regime and its allies to end their bloody aggression against the Gaza Strip. In a statement on the X social media platform on Monday, 18th of December, spokesman of Yemen's armed forces, Brigadier General Yahya Sari, identified the two ships attacked in the Red Sea earlier in the day as Swan Atlantic and MSC Clara. The statement said Yemenis had used naval drones to hit the ships, adding that the attacks were in solidarity with the Palestinian people in the light of the Israeli aggression against Gaza. The attacks are the latest under Yemen's campaign of pressuring the Israeli regime and the United States and other allies to end Israel's war on Gaza, a war that has massacred nearly 20,000 people since early October. The campaign is part of a larger regional anti-Israeli military drive that also involves resistance groups in Iraq and Lebanon. The commander of Yemen's 5th Military Zone, Major General Yusuf al-Madani, said earlier on Monday, 18th of December, Yemen is ready for any reaction to its anti-Israeli attacks in the region. Major General Al-Madani said Yemen's armed forces could significantly increase their firepower to respond to any threat from any party that seeks to drive a wedge between us and Palestine. He also warned that any move that intensifies tensions in Gaza would lead to an increase in tensions in the Red Sea. The warnings came amid reports suggesting that the United States and its allies may form a regional maritime task force to counter threats to shipping in the Red Sea. It also came just hours before oil giant British Petroleum, BP, said in a statement that it had decided to suspend oil transit activity via Red Sea routes because of threats emanating from Yemeni forces. Iran's Tasnim news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. The spokesman for Ansarullah resistance movement says the Yemeni army's operations against ships that are owned by Israel or bound for the occupied Palestinian territories have taken a big toll on Israel's economy. Mohammed Abdul Salam said on Sunday, 17th of December, Yemen's operations have left a significant economic impact on Israel. Yemen's armed forces have warned that they will target all vessels and ships that would use the country's territorial waters in the Red Sea and the Arabian Sea to reach Israeli ports. The Yemeni army has also announced that its operations will continue as long as the Israeli regime keeps up its aggression against the Gaza Strip. Mohammed Abdul Salam said, "All actions taken by Yemeni armed forces are linked to lifting the siege of Gaza and halting the Israeli aggression against the territory." He added, "If you want to stop Yemen's naval operations against the Israeli enemy, you must lift the blockade on the Gaza Strip, and food and medicine must be allowed to enter Gaza." At least four international shipping firms have already suspended transit through the Red Sea's internationally important Bab al-Mandab Strait, citing the potential of Yemeni attacks. This has reportedly inflicted $3 billion worth of damage on the Israeli economy by increasing threefold the price of goods that are imported to the occupied Palestinian territories. Stressing that the Red Sea is safe except for ships associated with the Israeli enemy, Mohammed Abdul Salam also praised the decision taken by the Chinese company to stop sending its ships to the occupying entity's ports. The Ansarullah official affirmed that Yemen's stance on Palestine stems from religious, national and moral principles, while describing Israel as a source of threat to the unity of Muslim nations. He reiterated, "The Palestinian cause is not open to negotiation, and we cannot accept what is happening to the Palestinians of Gaza." Also, Mohammed Abdul Salam announced that there is ongoing communication with influential countries with the goal of achieving Yemen's stated objectives, including lifting the blockade on the Gaza Strip and stopping Israel's aggression against Gaza. Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. A growing number of international companies have decided to pause shipments through the strategic Red Sea as Yemen's armed forces step up their attacks on vessels bound for the Israeli-occupied territories in support of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. Osama Rabai, the head of Egypt's Suez Canal Authority, said in a statement that 55 ships had changed their course from the Red Sea and navigated through the Cape of Good Hope on the Atlantic coast of South Africa since 19th of November, when the Yemeni armed forces and the popular Ansarullah resistance movement warned to target Israeli-affiliated ships in the area in response to Israel's incessant shelling of the Gaza Strip. Oil giant BP announced on Monday, 18th of December, that it had temporarily stopped its shipping operations via the Suez Canal after Yemen's growing attacks on commercial vessels in the area. BP said, "Safety and security of our people and those working on our behalf is BP's priority. In light of the deteriorating security situation for shipping in the Red Sea, BP has decided to temporarily pause all transit through the Red Sea." The Swiss-headquartered Mediterranean Shipping Company and France's CMA CGM announced on Saturday, 16th of December, that they had rerouted their services and suspended passage of their cargo ships through the Red Sea, joining Danish giant Maersk and German carrier Hapag-Lloyd in avoiding the strategic waterway. China's Orient Overseas Container Line also stopped cargo acceptance to and from the Israeli-occupied territories until further notice due to operational issues. Evergreen, the Taiwanese container transportation and shipping company, said it had temporarily suspended import and export services in the occupied territories until further notice, citing a security risk in addition to halting journeys via the Suez Canal. The container ship firm told its clients, "We ask for your understanding under these serious circumstances." The Bab al-Mandab Strait is a channel 32 kilometers wide, situated between Yemen on the Arabian Peninsula and Djibouti and Eritrea on the African coast. It is the route by which ships can reach the Suez Canal from the south, itself a major shipping lane. Avoiding it means vessels must take a much longer route, for example, navigating around South Africa. The Suez Canal is also a key route for global trade, particularly for the transport of oil, grain and consumer goods from East Asia. Journeys via the Cape of Good Hope typically add about 3,000 miles and can take up to an additional week, raising transit costs as a result of circumnavigating Africa. About 17,000 ships, some 10% of global trade, take this route every year. Any ship passing through the Suez Canal to or from the Indian Ocean has to pass this way. Analysts are linking the Yemeni armed forces' latest measures in the Red Sea to the Israeli regime's continued genocidal war against Palestinians of Gaza, which started on 7th of October. The Yemeni army has intensified attacks on ships en route to the Israeli-occupied territories after the illegal Israeli regime refused to extend a Qatari-brokered ceasefire agreement in the Gaza Strip and pressed ahead with its genocidal war on the Palestinians of Gaza. This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.